Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Having a baby is definitely life-changing, but there are some things that I really do want to try and keep the same. Staying active and even managing to get away as a family, that's what I'm really hoping for. I know that all of our lives are different. Bugaboo has a pushchair for everyone, whether you're based in the city, the country, or have a growing family, they've got you covered. The comfort of my baby is one of the most important things to me, so having a pushchair and a car seat that I can really rely on to keep both me and my baby safe is critical to feeling like I've got parenting sort of sussed. Find out more by visiting bugaboo.com.
Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice that you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. Going vegan, veggie, or simply eating more veg can all be healthy lifestyle choices. But if doing so gives you anxiety about hanging out with friends or makes you fear certain foods, it can actually be quite dangerous. Because yes, being too healthy can actually be unhealthy. For some, restrictive eating is a short-lived stage that ricochets into a junk food rebellion. For others, they find their way back to the middle of the road, but for so many, this so-called healthy way of eating can become a true obsession and, at its most extreme, an eating disorder known as orthorexia. This week's Food for Thought explores when healthy becomes unhealthy with Dr. Nikki Stamp, surgeon, TV presenter, and author of Pretty Unhealthy. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's really nice to be here. Very exciting.
I am beyond excited. I think since receiving your book, getting to read it and being completely inspired, and obviously I followed you on Instagram for quite a while and just seeing what you've been getting up to, it's a pleasure to have you in the UK, so thank you.
Oh, no, thank you.
I think we'll start with whether someone, we'll go right in, whether someone's been diagnosed with an eating disorder or slightly lesser degree or so, preoccupation of being unhealthy. When is that unhealthy, the occupation with being too healthy?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because I think you've kind of alluded to it there in that question, that you're walking a fine line. It's very easy to step from one thing to something that is not so great for you. So, you know, it's reasonable to be conscious and you know, observant about what you eat and making sure that you're exercising and not smoking and drinking and all those kinds of things. That's important. But then when you get really caught up in it to a point where it is impacting your mental health, your physical health, your social well-being, I think we forget about that a lot. That's when I think we start to get into territory where you're looking at something that's possibly not that good for you.
You're completely right. There's so many factors involved. And I think for anyone to just identify and acknowledge in themselves, I'm not quite happy right now, is quite a big step, because often people In this country, we still have a thing as well at the moment where weight is often seen as such a defining factor for health.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think weight is not going anywhere as something that people reach for, particularly in an instant to make a judgment about their own health or somebody else's health. But it's really just not that simple. You can't deny that in some situations, in some circumstances, and for some people, yes, your weight is a factor, and that can be at either end as well.
Yes.
But I think that to look at someone and say, or look at yourself and say, I'm unhealthy because of a figure on the scale, that's not right. It doesn't really have the support that we think it does.
Yeah, I think so. We use BMI, and yep. It's so tricky because I get a lot of clients coming in clinic saying, oh, the doctor's told me I'm just above the BMI, but I don't actually have any health problems.
Yeah. So, I mean, BMI, I think, is rightly criticised and analysed. And I think that if you're applying it to an individual, it's a tool that has very little use. If you're applying it to screen someone, so looking for a problem, if you're applying it to perhaps population level or as a research tool, that has validity. But, you know, I think one of the things that people don't always understand about science and research and medicine and so on and so forth is that, you know, our tools are always imperfect. And one of the things that makes them imperfect is the way that we use them. So if we use BMI willy-nilly, then, yeah, it wasn't designed for that. If we use it to look at an individual in front of us and decide if they're healthy, that's wrong. But if you're using it for the things that it's been designed for, it has some information-giving capability, and that's where we need to be using it.
Oh, I completely agree. It's just a wider understanding because things can be taken so literally.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of the time we want to believe in one number having the solution for absolutely everything, if only it were that simple.
Yep.
Because you can be overweight and be very fit.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that is important in your health is not necessarily that defined yes or no, I'm above or below a number. It's actually what you do. And we know, and particularly for women, that no matter their weight or their body composition, that if they live a healthy lifestyle, as in they tick all the boxes for exercise, nutrition, don't smoke, etc., that they have a very significant health benefit. So I've really moved away from that kind of thinking that, you know, we have to get you to a lower BMI, although I take that into account solely. Particularly with my patients, I'm very focused on what they're doing now. Just trying to get them to be active, for example, is just one simple thing.
That's so refreshing, and to come from a doctor as well, because it's something that unfortunately we just see such a lot of in this country, because medics in this country don't get enough nutritional education, lifestyle education, and to hear you say that is wonderful.
Yeah, but even with that in mind though, I'm just one piece of the puzzle. You know, so if I identify that someone is needing some help with what they eat, or, you know, if they exercise, you know, you reach for your experts. Now, that I'm sure, like the NHS, you know, we're pretty, you know, stretched with resources.
Just a bit.
A little bit. So, you know, it's not always easy to do that. And I think that, you know, doctors should be able to give out the basics, just like, you know, my allied health colleagues give out the basics of what I do a bit as well. You know, we all work in this together. But I think it is time to sort of change up our thinking and the way we give advice across the board.
Yeah, completely. I think there's often a misconception as well that it's all about overeating, but actually you can be overweight and be quite malnourished as well, can't you? That's something I don't think people realize.
No, and I think the way to look at this is to imagine if you are overweight and your diet consists, let's just say, solely of takeout food, okay? So that's all you're eating. By doing that, by eating that very calorie-dense food, you are unfortunately, though, missing out on a lot of nutrients. So, for example, you know, obesity, and I know that's a word that is very loaded, but, you know, medically speaking, someone who perhaps has, you know, extra weight and the medical complications of it, they can be still lacking in macronutrients, they can still be lacking in micronutrients, you know, So it's not that straightforward to say that oh they're very well nourished. No, they actually might not be.
No, exactly. You can be both ends of the spectrum, like correct. You said, and be completely malnourished. And
yeah.
Do you see this getting worse in Western society?
I mean that's sort of what the data suggests. You know, say if you look at UK, Australia, US, we're all fairly on par. We have a pretty similar spectrum of issues. I think health issues and outside of the sphere of food and weight and so on and so forth, we're pretty similar. But I do think that it is that all of these things are increasing, and they're not just about us eating too much. All of these choices that we make happen in a system that is designed to make us eat too much or exercise too little, or tobacco advertising is literally designed to get us to smoke. We're not failing ourselves. We are being failed by a system at large.
I don't know if you saw it. Just came into my head when you were saying that the Bite Back campaign.
I did see that. Yeah, made news at home as well.
It's fascinating, just how you can literally manipulate someone's food choices from external cues.
Yeah.
So they're just, for our listeners, they had a load of, I think it was teenagers.
Yes, they were, yeah.
It was
yeah.
teenagers. And I really felt for them because one of these girls in particular, it could have been the girl or the guy actually, was in the back of a black cab. And the advert in the cab was for this fried chicken. And then on the radio, it was the voice saying, fried chicken. Mm-hmm. On social media, someone eating fried chicken. Then they go into the restaurant and subliminally they've been affected by these cues. And they order fried chicken.
100%. Yeah, I mean, and when you see that, it really puts into, I want to say words, but, obviously it gives you something tangible to look at. You know, it's like if you go to the supermarket and very often as you get close to the checkout, there's a lot of, chocolate bars and, convenient food. And
always at the end.
There's nothing wrong with a chocolate bar. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, we all love it.
I really love it. But they are put in your eye line because marketing people know if you put that in your eye line as you're about to pay or wherever, that just by seeing it, particularly you're seeing it on repeat, that you'll want to purchase it. Like that, this system is designed to work against us.
Which is why it's easier said than done when lots of people say, oh, we eat like your ancestors or all these oversimplified things. We don't live in an environment that's conducive to eating that way.
We don't live in a simple world. No, not at all. No, it is. I know a lot of my colleagues would say to patients, oh, just eat less. And I'm like, oh, that is just such useless advice.
That is the worst message. Eat less, move more. That I think is the most unhelpful message at the moment.
Because it oversimplifies it. I mean, there are times when there's that bit of advice is kind of, could be useful, but it needs to be nuanced. Yeah. And that never comes across in that little sound bite of that kind of advice.
No, and then it makes you feel almost, going a bit off tangent to the question I was going to ask, but it can give people lots of feelings inside of guilt and shame,
100%.
Not being able to adhere to something that actually is unrealistic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
So it's complex, but would you say our diets definitely changed then over the last few decades?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that we do eat a lot more convenient food. I mean, you don't have to get off your couch to get food, which is sometimes wonderful.
It's incredible when you're not feeling well and you order a delivery.
Yeah,
but aside
I know.
From that.
Yeah, but it does. It makes a difference. I think we do eat those sort of convenient foods a lot more often. I think we're much more likely to not cook at home. And, that in itself is a predictor of health. I'm the first to admit I'm not a great cook.
Dara, I think people have this misconception that all health professionals are incredible chefs.
No.
We know how to make simple, fast, healthy food.
Yeah, even then, I can burn water. So, but it is a multifactorial thing. But I think our diets have changed, and the composition is really making it very difficult for us to eat healthily, for sure.
Yeah, I was having this conversation. I think it was with my husband's grandma. And she was just saying how different it was, how they would have no choice but to cook from scratch. There just wasn't any other option.
No, you couldn't. It was too expensive. Or those options, delivery did not exist.
No.
I think that makes a big difference. I I've had the same conversations even with my dad. You know, when they were growing up, the portions were so small because that's all people could afford.
Yeah.
Where we live in such an excessive kind of world at the moment, you know, it filters through everywhere, including to our food.
It's getting a bit philosophical, but there's the world of plenty, and then yet you have such extremities on either side of
correct.
That.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I find quite saddening. Mm-hmm. I know we can't tackle the world, but hopefully on this podcast, at least we can tackle some small things.
Absolutely. No, so I think that's a really accurate description. We are in a time of plenty.
And do you see the food and beverage industry getting worse before it gets better?
So look, this is definitely not my area of expertise, but I think, you know, such as the Bite Back campaign, you know, talk around sugar taxes and things like that, you know, that the roles that these corporations have to play in our health and well-being are not small, they're not insignificant. And I think it's really important for people in this field that we need to step up and start regulating them, because they're not going to change off their own volition. We need to step in and say, you guys are creating issues. Help us.
Yeah, no, 100%. Help us. Because life expectancy, I read, has changed in some countries now as well.
Yeah, the United States, they've had, I think it's, I'm probably going to get this number wrong now, but for a couple of years they've had a decline in life expectancy. And that's been particularly prevalent, I believe, from the 20s to early 60s. So we're talking about relatively young people in that age group. And look, some of it has come from things like suicide or accidents, other, you know, things that have nothing to do with your lifestyle necessarily. But there is a big increase in these non-communicable diseases such as diabetes or heart disease, some types of cancer. So I think that's very concerning because, you know, theoretically we should all be improving. You know, medical care is improving. You know, we're apparently more conscious of our health. You know, we should actually just be seeing a continual gradual increase in life expectancy.
Well, as a surgeon, for you, it must be the wrong word is fascinating, but a very interesting time.
It is. I think probably completely anecdotally, but I feel like I do see younger people now. Younger people with many more illnesses. They're often a lot sicker than people I looked after, say, 10 years ago. They are then either faced with a really shortened lifespan or a life of in and out of hospitals. That's not great. That's not what people want.
No.
Not what I want.
No, I don't think anyone, and this is something that's very important to emphasise, and I think you did that so well in your book as well, that it's not a choice people are actually mindfully making. Mm. They're not choosing to be this unwell. It's a quality of life that's surrounding them.
Yeah, so quality of life, I think, is very important to talk about because, you know, we talk about, say, life expectancy, you know, if you're born in this era, you know, expect to live until you're 80 or whatnot. But, you know, what if 50 of those 80 years you were, you know, you couldn't do what you wanted to, you couldn't walk up the stairs or, you know, play with children, you know, that those years are then are going to be pretty challenging. It's very easy, particularly if we're reporting on it in the media, to say, you know, your life expectancy is cut in half, you know, very dramatic headline that you sometimes see. Mm. But that's just one part of the picture. And I think that we really need to be looking at ways to minimise illness that people have to live with, because it is a really difficult way to live your life.
Oh, 100%. And let's chuck the social media thing on there, on top of everything
on
else.
Top, yeah, modern life.
Modern life. I mean, there's a whole host of influencers now that want to share their advice. And it's unfortunately, often even I feel, it's drowning out the qualified voices that are trying to give a balanced approach. Mm-hmm. This is something you cover extensively.
Mm-hmm. Look, you know, if I look at my presence on social media, I feel like I'm really having to push it uphill, because I'm not going to ever be able to give anything as sexy as, you know, bikini body transformations. There is nothing glamorous about what I do. It doesn't sell. And you know, I don't have, I think I also don't have the freedom, not that I want it, to be able to say whatever I like.
No, well, know how a professional technically does.
No, exactly. You know, because we're kind of aware that we should stay in our lane. Yeah. We understand that there's nuance and exceptions and whatnot in our advice. Whereas influencers, they're not necessarily held to that same standard. They don't have the same education. You know, I don't want to make people sound like they're horrible people. I think there are some people who genuinely feel or believe that they are being helpful, that they are making positive changes in people's lives. But I think now that we are more aware of this, it is completely inappropriate to be willfully ignorant or to be deliberately misleading about the advice that you give in your online platform.
Oh, 100%. And you've really hit the nail on the head when you said it's not intentional, because without the education to know that every paragraph you write, yes, you'll never be able to please everyone. That is a thing that
that is true.
We know this is very true, but at least we will try and make sure that our words are completely, well, they can be read in many different ways, shapes and forms, and we're aware of that and mm-hmm. how to get a point across. But often they won't think, oh, this could be read this way or this way, and mm-hmm. actually I don't have the grounding to understand the nuances within this.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, and I think we need to be looking to these people and say, you know, can I just point out, you know, that's maybe not the best way to say that, or that advice has been superseded. Mm. You don't have to be aggressive about it. But I think the really important thing is that as consumers, and most of us are consumers of social media, that we need to be a little bit more mindful about how we are consuming this information.
Yeah, I think to give an example to everyone listening, let's use the what I eat in a day.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's been one of the hardest things I think I've seen mm-hmm. with other influencers. They think they're being very helpful by mm-hmm. saying, for instance, I'm currently pregnant recording this episode. I've been asked, I've lost count.
Bet.
What do you eat in a day when you're pregnant? What can I do? There is no one size fits all.
No.
And unfortunately, it preys on the vulnerable, because you'll see someone with a million followers saying, this is what I eat every day. You'll look at them. You'll probably look at their aesthetic.
Correct.
Their mood, maybe, like their chirpiness or their mm-hmm. demeanour. It does not mean that will work for you.
No, I never do the what I eat ever. I rarely post about food. I have to be honest, you know, I know when I post about food, even, you know, something simple like I'm preparing dinner, and I actually have to post about that because, like I said, terrible cook, need to document that it happened. Yeah. You know, that I definitely notice that I'll get a lot of questions around what I'm eating. I'll get a lot of comments, and by comments, I mean, people give me a hard time. Yeah,
yeah, on your food choices. Yeah. That's the most terrifying aspect of it as well.
Yeah.
I think there's a place for inspiration and encouragement, mm-hmm. but it can definitely go either way. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at, I mean, what would you say needs to be done to bring the right information out of these individuals?
Yeah, so I think that, like I said, I think that, you know, harping on at them and telling them they're doing a bad job is not helpful. I think it is important that we do start holding influencers to account. Mm. But I think that should be done compassionately, because, like I say, I think the subset of people who are deliberately, you know, putting people in harm's way are probably quite small. The rest of them are just, you know, need to be
unaware,
to be taught.
Yeah.
Correct. You know, and I think also we need to be mindful that, you know, they sometimes have a lot on the line with these things. But I think that's probably not an achievable goal. I think what is achievable is we as consumers, as I said, we need to learn how to read social media. We need to learn how to read an expert. We need to learn how to ask for clarification. We need to be looking at where we're getting our information from, how to determine whether it's right. And you know, social media literacy is incredibly important. You know, we really need to be teaching that to children, to adults. None of us are immune to it. You can have an education like I do. I still, you know, think, oh, and then I have to, you know, sort of temper that enthusiasm and read and think mm-hmm. about what I'm seeing. You know, I would really like to see social media platforms step up to the plate. I think there's been some positives by Instagram and Facebook. Instagram, I know this is probably coming here soon, have hidden likes, for example.
Yeah, so we've got a trial going on, because I know they trialed it with Australia,
yep.
didn't they?
And yeah, we we've still got no likes. It's really nice.
I think that's lovely. I really look forward to that. Yeah, I look forward to that.
But, you know, also things like being able to report inaccurate information.
Yes.
So that is one thing, right? But if I report a post for being inaccurate on Instagram, what I didn't realise is that that doesn't guarantee that that post will be checked. They will occasionally check it. And then even if it is inaccurate, there's no guarantee as to what they'll do. So Facebook, though, have done something slightly different. And if you are exposed to that post, at the, you know, whether it be about health or politics or something, you know, fake news, that they will then, you'll be notified that you saw a post that was inaccurate. So I think that that is something that the social media platforms absolutely need to get behind, because otherwise they're complicit.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I would love to see that. And half of me in my head is thinking, but who's going to be making that call with an Instagram or Facebook? And
yeah, I know.
It's tough.
Well, it's fraught. And this is why, you know, at the end of the day, I don't want to be someone who's, you know, saying it's up to us wholly, you know, it's a big burden to bear as an individual, but we have to take responsibility for our social media literacy.
Oh, we do. We have responsibility as content consumers and creators. Correct. Everybody should play a role.
Yeah.
I really liked what you said about getting it into schools, because unless you've been fortunate enough to have a university education looking at literature and science, how on earth are you meant to know what to look for?
Right.
I mean, how is anyone meant to know? And if we struggle, it has to be taught.
Agree. I have to also think I have the privilege, and, you know, probably a lot of us in a slightly older generation also have had the privilege of a life without social media.
Yes, before it came along.
That's right.
We remember what it's like.
Yeah, exactly.
For so many.
Yeah, but no, I do think that needs to be taught. I don't think it's just to children. And, you know, I know in schools, particularly at home, there are a lot of programs around life skills. They're becoming more common. And this is just another one of those life skills that just needs to be taught.
Because it's something you discuss as well, that perhaps people are now more concerned, unfortunately, with their appearance than their own health.
Yeah. So appearance, as we've kind of alluded to, whether it be about weight or, you know, just like the overall aesthetic of your body is very much linked in with looking healthy. Mm. You know, I think one of the probably the best example I can think of that is so blatantly obvious why it's wrong is having a tan, right? Having a tan. We all think we look a bit better with a bit of a tan.
I have to be honest, I do like a fake tan spray, because in the UK, there's no way I'm going to be getting any sun.
Well, there's no way I'm going into the sun in Australia, because it's scorching.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so we'll still see people, you know, sunbathing to look healthy, because they look healthier with a bit of colour.
Yeah.
And we know for a fact that that is so, so dangerous. So dangerous. So that, I think that's a really nice, tidy little example of how you can accidentally be taught that looking a certain way is healthy. And there's a huge amount of problem with that kind of thinking. You know, one of the problems is creating poor body image. So, you know, being very harsh and negative about the way you look, which has a lot of, you know, psychological and physical fallout. It may demotivate you to exercise mm-hmm. or eat well because it sort of brings on feelings of shame. And it's a very narrow ideal. So if you are thin and white and usually, you know, very advantaged socioeconomically, then you've got half a chance of yeah. reaching that ideal. If you are not, if you are, you know, a person of colour or you, you know, different ability, you've really got no chance in some ways because those ideals were not made
for you.
No, they're made for people like white people like me.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's very difficult. And then when you add into it, you know, everyone has Photoshop on their phone basically with apps, you don't even know if what you're aspiring to is accurate. So it's just a real mess getting caught up in appearance.
It's such a mess. Anecdotally, I used to be in the music industry before mm-hmm. moving into mm-hmm. nutrition, and I would pin success a lot of the time sometimes, or would I get the next record contract mm-hmm. or what I needed
mm-hmm.
on appearance, not just ability.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
drummed into you
yes.
in
yeah.
the industry. And yeah. I saw when I was away at Christmas, I was on a coach ride, and the girl in front, she looked about 12 years old. She had a phone, and it was my husband that kind of nudged me and goes, "Look at that." And I'm not one to normally peek through the seats, you know, to look at someone else's phone. But he goes, "No, look." And I look, kind of peered through without being too obviously nosy. And she was, I'd never seen it before. But obviously, all teenagers have these things now.
Mm-hmm.
These apps, so she was filtering her detail on her eyes and putting her cheeks up. I could not get over what I was seeing. She was so young, yet
yeah.
she obviously felt the need on her little picture.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
just filter every image of her face.
Yeah, and I think we all do to a degree. I mean, I find it more concerning, obviously, with someone incredibly young. But I think we all do. We don't even know what skin looks like anymore.
No.
It's we've just got such a distorted view of what we look like individually, but also, you know, around other people around us.
Because this has given rise to eating disorders, which I know is something you've written about.
Yeah, so I think that the role of social media in eating disorders is complicated.
Mm.
I think it's very easy to point the finger at social media for causing increasing numbers of eating disorders, and it is something that is, you know, talked about a lot. It's a far too simplistic way of looking at it.
It's never black and white.
No. If social media was the answer to this, then it would be a lot easy fix for anyone who has an eating disorder. It's a complex biological, psychological, social illness.
Yes.
And to say that, you know, a person being exposed to an advertisement for a slimming product or to, you know, someone who looks, you know, very thin in a bikini is going to cause that is not correct. But what is concerning is that this exposure to social media, particularly when you're looking at it for health and fitness type information, does have negative effects on our psychological well-being, creating anxiety, shame, poor body image. It can lead to us avoiding exercise or just, you know, avoiding, you know, paying attention to nutrition if we needed to. But, you know, the other side of the coin is that it can lead to disordered eating, not the same as an eating disorder,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, still can be quite damaging to dangerous dieting, to over-exercising, all these kinds of things. So it's not letting social media off the hook by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, there's pros and cons.
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, I use social media, obviously, and like, you know, pretty much everybody. And, you know, there have been some very big advantages in it.
It can be a wonderful community.
Totally. Absolutely. You can get support. You can get friendships. You can get information. You know, good information, I mean, not bad information. So you've got to sort of take the good with the bad. And I think this is where coming into it being a savvy consumer is really important.
And once again, to hear a health professional explain that an eating disorder is not simple, it's very complex, and mental health illness is extremely important.
Yeah.
They're often very, very misunderstood.
Yes.
Especially orthorexia, which is
yeah
still not fully recognised, but
right.
we're kind of nearly there.
Yeah, and I, you know, talking to experts in the field, I think that it probably will get a spot as a recognised, know, eating disorder. But, you know, orthorexia is something that seems to be relatively new because of our obsession with wanting to look good. And while it doesn't manifest that we know about in ways that we might say something, you know, really quite severe like anorexia, it's not without damage. And, you know, it's very physically challenging for those people. It's socially challenging. So, you know, I think orthorexia is something that is probably got pretty strong roots in social media.
And for anyone listening, orthorexia, if you break it down, rexia, you know, a derivative of kind of anorexia, mm-hmm. of restriction of types of food based on pure and clean items of yeah. food would yeah. be the way to describe
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and it was first noticed by a doctor who used to, you know, have very strong roots in lifestyle medicine, and he was noticed.
Bratman, wasn't it?
Bratman, exactly. Yeah. So he was, you know, describing that I was telling these people to eat well, and some of them were taking it to such an extreme that they were having, you know, malnourishment, or they yeah. were having, you know, difficulty socializing because, you know, they might have to eat something that they didn't prepare and weigh and measure yeah. and all those kinds of things. And, you know, that was causing them significant amount of distress.
And it can often be a pathway of recovery from an eating disorder like anorexia. There's right. so many different I think areas that yeah. I know our dietitian in the clinic works on a lot. But are we becoming, and is this because of social media or because orthorexia is on the rise, maybe too reliant on supplements and pills to deliver results?
I think everyone wants a quick fix. I mean, you know, myself included. Like,
yeah, oh, if it were that easy.
Yeah, yeah. If it were that easy, it'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? And I think that's where we're going wrong, and it opens the door for supplements, for example, to fix everything. And, you know, if you look at it from my perspective, you know, like looking at medicines as in actual pills and medicine, they're important, they are life-saving.
Yes.
But they also don't, you know, they're a bit like closing the gate after the horse has bolted sometimes. And it would be much better if we were able to build a society where, you know, people had that sort of, you know, ability to live a healthy lifestyle.
Prevention before right. relying yeah. on the symptom hider or the
yeah,
mask.
Exactly. You know, like I said, I prescribe a lot of pills, and I'm grateful to, because I know that they save people's lives. But I do think that we need to do that in conjunction with all these other important changes. But those changes, unusually, say, you know, 9 times out of 10, not the quick fix changes that you are finding from an influencer on social media yeah. selling you a tea or a powder or something else like that.
Sleeping pills, everything pills. you literally see them all. And what's even more concerning is the claims that come with them often aren't regulated if they're sold online anyway.
Right.
So people are reading things thinking, oh, this is legitimate information.
Correct.
They'll order it and you can't guarantee the quality.
You can't guarantee what's in them. You can't guarantee if they work. I mean, look, if they don't work and that's the worst thing, you've gotten off lightly. You may have lost some money, but, you know, I think you've gotten off lightly
yeah.
because, you know, there have been studies where they've looked through things like DNA sequencing, so very high level science, at the content of some supplements, and that can be a sports supplement or a diet supplement, and found things that are banned. So, you know, many years ago, they're not available anymore. Certain types of weight loss drugs cause such serious heart disease. And I've looked after these people. They end up needing heart transplants. And those substances are pretty well banned worldwide, but you can find them in these unregulated products. Yeah. And I think that's really scary. We need to be very cautious about what we're consuming. If it works, if it doesn't work, rather, I think that's a win, because yeah. the alternative is that you get exposed to something dangerous. You know, it's just not worth it.
And no matter how desperate, if you are in that position listening where you're literally turning to online information, seek help, because mm-hmm. there are so many free helplines, and it should only ever really be a health professional that's mm-hmm. prescribing these things to you.
Agree wholeheartedly. Yeah.
Yeah, just be very, very careful. And I think from reading the book as well and just having a look through, I think we should touch on alcohol and smoking, because I'm sure that's something that affects your line of work.
Oh, yes, hugely.
Completely. Yep. Is it true that women are often the ones that take up smoking, perhaps to play a role with their weight?
So quitting smoking is difficult, obviously. Nicotine, incredibly addictive. It's designed that way. And women, and particularly young women, are often citing that they're afraid of weight loss, weight gain rather.
Yeah.
They're afraid of gaining weight from quitting. And that worries me. Young women are a demographic where we do see, I think in some reports, around 20% in some age groups, some younger age groups are smoking, which is just unheard of. Like, you know, you literally have to be living under a rock to not know it's not a great thing for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's a really addictive substance. The marketing has been honed over many years.
Yeah, no, I think marketing is there.
Yeah, but young women, yeah, I think is a really concerning demographic, you know, that they are being targeted. Same with alcohol. You know, I was at an event, and I won't name the event, but I was at an event, and there was some sponsorship of a segment by an alcohol company, and this presenter was talking about how they were designing beer, different types of beer, to be more appealing to women. So they had scientific studies trying to work out which tastes women are, you know, at a biologically, you know, important level more responsive to, and they're going to add them to the beer to make the women drink more beer. And I was infuriated.
I can't even. I would not want to be sat on your table at that event, Nikki.
No. I think, fortunately, I had to leave to go somewhere else. I think I was catching a plane. I was thinking, thank God, because otherwise I was going to make a scene.
It's unbelievable. I was contacted by a lager company to market the health benefits, the gut health benefits of alcohol. And it's very, they will come up with anything
totally.
Want to sell their products to you.
And people need to know that.
Mm.
There are no scruples here.
No. They will pay big money.
Huge.
People will take that money.
Of course they will. Yeah, of course they will. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, look, everyone needs money. It's nice and all those sorts of things. But, you know, if the price is right, people will support these products, even knowing, or maybe, you know, accidentally, but they'll just do it, and we will buy it.
And again, we don't have anything sexy to offer here, Nikki, apart from moderation is key.
Yeah. How interesting.
Great. You can have a drink, just don't make it too much. And do you think it's the Generation Z that are kind of turning away from this more than their predecessors?
I think there's a lot more awareness around this, you know, alcohol and smoking in younger people. You know, I guess it remains to be seen how that plays out over the rest of their lives. But yeah, I think it's just a lot more aware. I mean, I think about my own sort of growing up, you know, when I was a kid and we used to watch the cricket, it was the Ashes, obviously, sponsored by Benson and Hedges, it's a cigarette company.
Yeah.
You know, that was really normal, and now it's not. You know, in Australia we have plain packaging of cigarettes, you know.
When I was at school, I used to get called Lambert and Butler because of the brand of cigarette thing. It was awful, and I didn't really understand it, but of course that's when it was cool to smoke when I was younger. It's strange.
It's weird that, you know, kids know this. So kids are exposed to that advertising.
So young. I could ask you questions about this for forever, but I need to get the questions from the audience for you. So you haven't seen these, but you'll be very well equipped to answer these.
I hope so.
But so Sophia has said, there are so many new supposed healthy foods in the supermarket. How can I tell the good between the bad?
I'm going to be really boring. Keep it simple, you know. And if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
The key phrase, if it's too good to be true, it often is. I love that. Maria, I think I've been eating well and exercising a few days a week, but I don't feel or look any better for it. Could stress at work be the difference?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good question, because here's someone who's doing something and anything is great, so well done. Like, that's amazing. You should be incredibly proud. But yes, you know, we sort of pin all of our hopes sometimes on diet and exercise without realizing that a lot of other things in our life can make us, you know, mentally and physically unhealthy, and work stress, you know, big one. So yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the way I would approach that, it would be to be really proud of your achievements, but what else, what can you do to target that that other thing, that work stress, or it could be, you know, relationship stress or whatever, to make yourself feel a bit better.
Yeah, right. We often rarely work with clients without recommending psychological services, which is
amazing.
I'm very fortunate to be in my own boss.
Yeah.
But that service wouldn't be available, of course, on all public healthcare.
No, it's not. I mean, similar health system in some ways. You know, it's hard to get psychological help.
But just maybe mind mapping things. Sometimes I think just being aware of what is actually going on in my life. Oh, I had an argument with my boss today. Then the tubes were late. Then something else happened. And I think Nikki answered that perfectly. Tara has said, what are a few really healthy things I should always include in my weekly shop?
Vegetables.
Love.
That's all. I mean, I know that's not all. No, vegetables, simple. Yeah. I mean, I'm really boring. I'm sorry.
No, this is what we want. We want the truth.
We want boring advice. I think vegetables. And, you know, I also think that, you know, good healthy fish and all those sort of really basic things. But I'm going to throw something controversial in. I'm going to say if you would like a bar of chocolate, and your weekly shop, I think that's okay too, because that is healthy if it's part of your broader eating pattern, and it's healthy to do something enjoyable.
So true. And if you allow yourself enjoyed items, you're less likely to overeat on them anyway. Yeah. So
I'm actually just justifying my chocolate choices to myself.
In fact, as you're over here, before you return back, you'll have to stock up on chocolate.
Oh, but see, this is where we could have a bit of an ashes standoff here.
Okay.
Who has the better chocolate? Because I know my English friends will come to Australia and go, oh my God, your Cadbury is so different. And I'll come here and say the same.
Really?
So we can have a chocolate off.
Oh, I love that. Because we're so lucky to have the stuff from Switzerland come over a bit sooner. So I don't know. I've never been to Australia, so I can't really.
I will send you some Australian chocolate.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to hold you to that. And the last question is from, I love this name, Fenella.
That's nice.
Fenella, it's a gorgeous name. And, this is quite appropriate. I've just had my first baby.
Oh,
congratulations,
cute.
Fenella. I really want to return to my pre-baby weight.
Ooh.
Where do I start? And I know you've got a chapter in your book.
Researching that was a bit heartbreaking because there is a huge amount of pressure on women who are pregnant or just had a baby to look a certain way.
Huge.
Yeah, like stop it if you are doing that. Stop it. You know, I think it's important to acknowledge that after you've had a baby, your body will change. And it's different for different people. And what is really important is that you and bub are healthy. And, you know, if we're going to look at mum specifically, it's getting back to exercise once you've been cleared by your doctor or midwife. It's about, you know, trying to have the nutrition that you need. And I'm going to say the nutrition that you need because you are responsible for an actual human.
Yeah, you need to actually be able to focus to feed that human.
You need to create breast milk and all those sorts of things. So there are plenty of good dietary guidelines for mothers, particularly and mothers who are breastfeeding. Follow those. If you see a celebrity who has snapped back into shape, you have my full permission to ignore them.
I love that because they are everywhere.
Oh, they're everywhere. And look, you know, everyone could snap back into whatever if they had their resources, please.
I know. thank you so much, Nikki, for answering those. We now go on to the fact or fiction round. Okay, so are you ready?
I think so.
If you could answer fact or fiction to the following questions. I know, it's tough for us scientists to do this one. This is great. So, juice cleanses detox your body.
Fiction.
There is great.
Snarky responses everywhere.
Fat shaming is scientifically proven to not motivate weight loss.
That is true. It can demotivate weight loss.
We didn't go into that, actually. That's something I should ask about in a minute. Less time spent on social media will make you feel better.
Yes, that is a fact.
Need to do more of that.
Yeah.
Lots of small meals is healthier than three big meals.
No.
Supermarkets only sell unhealthy brands.
No, fiction.
The best place to get health advice is on social media.
Oh, my God, fiction. fiction.
Oh, dear. Organic food is worth its excessive price.
Oh, fiction.
touch on that very, very quickly.
No evidence that organic food has any higher nutritional value than regular food.
Bingo.
I feel like I'm getting marked in school.
No, it's good. It's good.
Grade me.
You need to count calories to lose weight.
Ooh, I'm going to sit on the fence on this one. I know you want one, but I think in certain situations, under the care of a professional, yes, maybe. But for everyone on the street, not always useful.
Yeah, I've witnessed both being effective with and without.
Yeah.
Snacks should be avoided to stay healthy.
No fiction.
That was our fact or fiction round.
Oh, I feel like I didn't do terribly. That's really good.
You completely aced it. I think for everyone listening, it's just so lovely to hear someone that can speak with conviction but knows when to stay on the fence, which is actually quite an important thing, because I think we could all take a leaf out of that book. So that does nearly wrap up the episode. But as with every guest, we do finish with a food for thought. So today, I think mine would be to start focusing on the social media obsession with being healthy and looking good, because it is often presenting an unattainable goal, as Nikki and I have discussed, heightening expectations. I mean, I think Nikki even said quite rightly that there's so many different ethnicities, cultural groups, and there's only one ideal often placed in the media anyway. So it's quite important to note that these ideals can have severe effects on people's health, and rather than bringing out the good, it can often bring out the reverse. So I'm of the firm belief that I want you to get back to basics. Just think of the boring, unsexy sell of a healthy lifestyle being a long-term kind of thing. There are no quick fixes. What works for some may not work for others. So try and just do things that make you happy, and remember that an overnight success isn't always possible, guys, but positive change can happen. And this is the pun that I wanted to add in, but so ultimately this can lead you to being pretty healthy rather than unhealthy. So Nikki, if you could leave our listeners with a take-home message.
I think if I could sort of distill what I'm trying to get out into one thing, is to focus on what your body can do, how amazing it is, you know, whether it be that it's amazing that you can run or make a baby or just that your heart beats nonstop. Focus on those amazing things. Put appearance way to the side. It doesn't matter. And do things that are good for you and not for how you look.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much for coming on Food for Thought.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this episode, you're going to absolutely love what's coming next week. So make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please do leave a 5-star review. It really does help to get this podcast out there so that we can reach higher highs in the charts and hopefully be able to help more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.